Forest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you like rock and roll? Do you love rock and roll? Or do you absolutely love rock and roll? Well, so do I. My name's Steve Avine. I'm your DJ here every Tuesday from 10 to midnight at the Rock Spectrum Radio Show here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Here on the Rock Spectrum, you'll hear all the best rock
and metal
around. So come on, come join me. Every Tuesday from 10 to midnight, I guarantee you won't regret it.
If you want to know what's going on around town, tune in to the Motor Calendar on WHFR 4 to 5 every Thursday. We encourage you to get out and support live music. You'll learn where local bands are playing and what they sound like. That's the Motor Calendar, every Thursday, 4 to 5, on the station making waves.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And we have a return guest today in Dennis Balthasar. Dennis is one as was on the show almost a year ago when we talked about the pyramids in Egypt and around the world. However, some new and startling revelations concerning the pyramids have come to my attention, and I'd like to pick his brain on that. Dennis is an independent researcher, journalist, and lecturer living in Roswell, New Mexico, and his focus is on the Roswell incident of 1947, However, as research extends to investigations of Area 51, underground bases, and ancient Egypt. He's a certified Mutual UFO Network field investigator. Dennis has been featured on countless documentaries and European, Japanese, and American productions, as well as being interviewed on radio and TV shows. And once again, we're privileged to have him on We Are Not Alone. Welcome back to the show, Dennis.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Dave.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you again. There is a book out just recently by one Annie Jacobson called Area 51. Big, thick tome of a book. And you did a review of that book and found a few faults with it, as I recall. As I recall.
You being very complimentary.
Well, surely she got something right in there. No? What are you talking about here?
Dave, I had no intention of reading the book, really, when I first saw it and started reading things on the Internet about it. I assumed it was Area 51 and she had done her research, and I started hearing about that she was talking about the Roswell incident of 1947, which, of course, has been one of my primary areas of interest for the last 25 years. So
right.
After reading some of the things I saw on the Internet about others that had reviewed it, I decided, well, I better buy it and read it. So I did.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't get very far into the book before I started throwing red flags up, because most of the information that she had about Area 51 was very informative and probably well-researched, but she would have been much better off had she stuck just with the Area 51 portion in her book and left out the Roswell portion, because she absolutely did no research for the statements she made about Roswell.
Okay, so that on Area 51 was pretty much on... pretty much correct.
I think it was pretty correct, and she had a lot of names in there that people weren't familiar with that were involved.
Mm.
She had a lot of information about the ox cart, which turned into the SR-71 Blackbird airplane, how that was developed. So I was impressed with the information she had about Area 51, but I was totally unimpressed with the information about the Roswell incident.
Okay.
A couple examples that I caught was, she said that the United States government, this was right in the front of the book, she said the United States government has never admitted that Area 51 exists.
Hmm.
Well, as a matter of fact, every president since Clinton, both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, have issued presidential determinations every year stating that Groom Lake, Area 51, was exempted from environmental laws. So we know Area 51 is, we know that it's there, and that it's exempt from environmental laws. I've not found such a document for our current president, and I don't know if they no longer make them public or if maybe they have decided not to continue that. That was brought on because of a lawsuit two women had filed against the government when their husbands died of radiation exposure because they burn toxic waste above ground at Area 51.
Yeah.
No other industry in the country is permitted to do that, but they have exempted Area 51 from that, so they continue to do that, among other things that go on there that we don't know about.
Yeah. Well, why would they do that? I mean, you got to take care of your people, don't you? Or don't they care? Don't they care about that?
And then she said that Walter Hart, who was a public relations officer at the base and wrote the first article, July 8, 1947, about the Roswell incident that we had in our possession, a flying saucer.
Mm.
She said that the base commander had sent Walter Hart back to the radio station with a second press release stating the first was incorrect.
Mm.
Well, the first press release was Walter Hart's. The second press release was General Ramey in Fort Worth, who debunked it and said it was a weather balloon.
Mm.
And I knew Walter very well, having been involved with the UFO Museum from 96 to 98 and talked to him every day. He never went back and told the radio station that the first report was incorrect, because those were his orders from the base commander, Colonel Blanchard.
Mm.
She talks about the Joint Chiefs of Staff to command and recover the craft, the airframe, the propulsion equipment, including the power plant. Well, every witness that I've talked to, and that includes 125 people who had firsthand knowledge of this, said it was nothing but a debris field. The biggest piece they found was something like 3 or 4 feet in diameter, and never mentioned any of the equipment that she referred to that they had recovered. She talked about Russian writing kind of block letters that had been stamped or embossed in a ring running around the inside of the craft.
Russian writing.
Major Marcel was the top intelligence officer at the time. He knew what Russian writing looked like.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a piece big enough to have any kind of writing on it going around the craft. The weather balloon story that remained the official cover story is not true, because the weather balloon story was General Ramey's rebuttal on July 9th, less than 24 hours after Walter Hull's press release.
Mm.
And in 1994, the Air Force issued the Roswell report stating it was a weather balloon. It wasn't a weather balloon, it was a Mogul balloon. And then 3 years later, in 1997, the Air Force came out with their case closed report, which said that the bodies were anthropomorphic crash test dummies, which weren't used till 1953, 6 years after the incident.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been four excuses, and we don't stick with the first one about General Ramey. She referred to the Roswell Army Airfield being 45 miles to the southwest of Sandia Base near Albuquerque. Obviously, she's never drove from Albuquerque to Roswell, because it's 202 miles.
Goodness gracious.
Straight line is 120 miles, so she's only off by 50 miles on that. And
but there's no driving straight line, is there?
No, definitely not.
Unless you get on the back of a crow, and as the crow flies.
There you go. She'd still be off by 50 miles. She's talking about Hillenkoetter, that in his position as a CIA director, he knew that the flying disc was Russian, had been sent by Joseph Stalin. Well, if Russia had such a craft, why was it never used in any of the conflicts they were involved in?
Did he call it a flying disc?
He didn't know.
Okay. But
she talks about Vannevar Bush referring to back engineering the craft by stating that take it apart and put it together again. There was nothing to take apart. The only thing found on the Foster Ranch in the field, 3/4 mile long by several hundred feet wide, was pieces of debris. And debris is hardly an intact craft that could be taken apart. It was already apart from the crash.
And if it was a weather balloon or a Mogul balloon, what is to take apart and put back together?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She said America's first post-war nuclear test begins in a mysterious Army-Navy assignment in a sand-swept town, Roswell. Well, the first atomic bomb test took place at White Sands Missile Range, 100 miles south of Roswell at Trinity Site, in 1945, and later in the Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
So, you know, that's just a few of the examples that I found in her book that just absolutely blew me away that she did not do any research.
Right, right. Well, let's get back to those environmental laws. They're burning toxic waste, or at least they were burning toxic waste, above ground.
Right.
And like I say, I know it's the military, but don't they care about their own men and then their own selves?
Obviously not, Dave, because this was all brought about by a lawsuit. The two guys that died of radiation exposure never told their wives what they did at Area 51.
Right, understandable.
And they filed a suit against the government. And the judge was not even allowed to look at the paperwork and said you can't sue something that doesn't exist.
Oh, my Lord.
And it was dropped.
What year was this? Do you remember?
Probably about 10 years ago.
But they had already admitted that Area 51 existed, correct?
Well, yeah, we found out about it in the 1980s through a Russian satellite picture.
Right.
It's been there since 1955. It was opened by the CIA to test the U-2.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a secret place to test this aircraft, and they looked at 12 locations in the southwest United States and decided on Groom Lake.
Right.
Today, it is the size of Connecticut, Switzerland. Has four runways. One is 30,000 feet. That's 6 miles of runway. So they're bringing something in at tremendous velocity.
Right.
It employs anywhere from 500 to 4,000 people, depending what projects are being done there. Today, most of the research with aircraft is on drones, the unmanned vehicles. But in the past, every new airplane that we've developed since the U-2, which includes the A-12, the A-10, the B-1, the B-2, have been test flown there in secrecy. The F-117 stealth aircraft, the little fighter that we found out about in the Gulf War in 1991, that was on the drawing board in 1973, but wasn't made public until the Gulf War. So the government and the military are good at keeping secrets. They've had a lot of experience over the years. The atomic bomb had 50,000 people involved across the country for about 10 years that nobody knew about. The code of the Second World War was kept secret for about 10 years. So they've had a lot of practice.
Well, the thing is, Area 51, even though it existed since the 50s, people were saying, you know, it's there. I know it's there. People are saying it's there. And they kept denying it until the 80s, correct?
Well, I was there in 2006. I did two lectures at the little town of Rachel, that's known for the Little Alien Inn, the tavern.
I've been there.
I did two lectures there, and the wife and I drove out to both the gates. The one gate that you see on TV documentaries is that one that has the 13-mile straight road, a dirt road that goes out. And I told my wife at about 10 miles, I said, start watching the hills because we may see a Jeep or a pickup, and that'll be guards. And sure enough, we came around the corner by the signs, and there they were up on a hill, sitting in a pickup with binoculars on us, listening to what we were saying. And then the other gate that I wasn't overly familiar with is a double drop-down gate with a guard shack in it. And they have a camera mounted on about a 30-foot pole. I walked along the boundary, and there is no fence, by the way. So I walked along the boundary, and that camera kept following me. If I'd stopped, the camera would be on me. And after about three times, I turned around and waved at the guards. It's got to be a boring job to be sitting out there in the middle of nowhere waiting for somebody to show up.
Right, because very few ever do, really.
Yeah, and the security, of course, is the top security anywhere in the world. But right. The signs say the use of deadly force is authorized, and they definitely mean it.
Yeah.
You don't cross that border, because if you do, they're going to call the local sheriff. You're going to be interrogated. Fined from $500 to $6,000, and you're going to be, they'll know where you're at for the rest of your life.
Oh, my goodness. Even if you just wander in, huh?
No, you don't want to wander in. And David's, I found it to be a unique situation to stand there. You know, I've seen documentaries and read books and articles about Area 51. But to be standing there at that entrance where those signs are and see the guards up there, with binoculars watching it, is a totally different feeling than, you know, watching it on a documentary or something.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I was there. I was at the, well, now white mailbox, or called black mailbox.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were the guards there, just sitting there watching. And I videotaped them, and they just didn't bother me.
They won't bother you unless you cross over or get too close. I was on a History Channel documentary back in November on the Decoded series on Wednesday nights, and they interviewed me here, and we were talking about the Roswell incident, and I'm of the belief, for whatever reason, that the material that was taken from Roswell in 1947 to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio today could be at Area 51 because of better security. And I didn't know it at the time when they were filming me, that the History Channel was filming me, but Area 51 was going to be the main topic of that show. And they did go up there, and the guards did come down towards them.
Mm-hmm.
But they left and got away, and mm-hmm. nothing ever happened.
Okay. So they have this secret of all these secret planes and what have you at Area 51. Mm-hmm. I understand that. We've got to have those kept secret. I understand that. But what proof is there that there are crashed alien discs there? Is there proof? And I thought that's where they took them in the first place.
Bob Lazar was made famous because he came forward and said that he was asked to back engineer one of the craft
mm-hmm.
at a location called S4, which is adjacent to the Area 51 base.
Mm-hmm.
And there's seven doors that go into the mountain that are painted to look, textured to look like the surrounding area, so you can't notice them from the air.
Right.
I believe he said there was 9 levels below ground there. Area 51 supposedly has 22 levels below ground. But Lazar was supposed to have back-engineered the propulsion system on one of those craft. Now, we have done a lot of investigation into Bob Lazar
mm-hmm.
and can't find anything that verifies what he's saying, because he claimed to have degrees from MIT and Caltech, and there's no record of that. None of the professors ever heard of him. He worked at Los Alamos here in New Mexico for the Navy Department, because we know that because his name was in a phone book.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what his job was. And I have talked to physicists who say that his calculations don't go far enough on the propulsion system things that he claims that he back-engineered. So
the element,
I have a lot of questions about Lazar.
The element 15, right?
Yeah.
That's what he called it. But, you know, George Knapp broke that story with Bob Lazar.
Yep.
And he didn't believe him either. And then he did some investigative reporting on it and found an old phone book from Area 51, verified that it was an old phone book from Area 51, and Bob Lazar's name was in it.
Now, see, I haven't heard that. I heard the one about Los Alamos here in New Mexico.
Yeah, that too.
There, but I've never heard that they found a book at Area 51 with his name in it.
That too. And he was supposed to have graduated, I believe it was, MIT?
MIT and Caltech.
Yeah, okay. And they said no, nobody ever knew of him, and they found a yearbook with Bob Lazar's name and picture in it. So, yeah, you know, that's up in the air. I understand where you're coming from, because it, you know, a fantastic story, it sounds like, Bob Lazar's coming
and,
out
and
with.
He
but
he could be a, what I call a stooge for the government, where, you know, you go public with information and then they debunk it and make you look like a fool.
Well, according to Lazar, he foolishly brought in some friends to watch these UFOs being launched, and he got caught. Of course you're going to get caught.
Right.
And so they fired him, and he started to worry that they were going to, I guess he found a bullet in his mailbox and that type of thing. And so he started to worry that they were going to crucify him. They're going to kill him. And so he went to George Knapp with the story.
Yeah.
And George,
I have a lot of respect for Knapp. He's done a lot of good investigative reporting. But his story on Lazar, I'm not completely sold on it.
Yeah. I interviewed Lazar quite a while back here. And I told him, I said, you know, Stanton Friedman really doesn't buy Lazar's story. And George Knapp gets a little huffy at that, you know. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he didn't have much respect for Friedman either, at least not in this area, because he said that he was concerned. George Knapp was concerned about his story, too. But mm-hmm. These three things... They found the.
I just don't know. I don't think there's enough information. Factual information has come forward on Lazar to verify all his claims. I can't go with just one reporter.
Right.
doing that. I respect him, but I need more information. It's kind of like Phil Corso the day after Roswell.
Yeah.
I met him on three different occasions before he passed away, and I really liked him as a person.
Right.
But when I read the book the day after Roswell, I couldn't wait to get to the next page until I got to the end, and there wasn't one reference in the book.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I remember you saying
to
that.
Me, doing this type of research, you have to have confirmation and validity, otherwise the debunkers are going to be all over you.
Oh, really, really, really. Now, if you can get with George Knapp, this is my suggestion. I would ask him, what have you done, George, to verify Bob Lazar's story? And there are these three things that he told me, and he's told others, that the MIT, the phone book from Area 51, and what else was it? Wherever they poo-pooed him. You already said the Los Alamos. And they were trying to debunk him.
What bothers me with something like that is how easy it is with computers and different programs that are available to doctor a document.
Yeah, but the thing is, these came out before they could do that. And I think George Knapp would verify that. I don't know. I'm not trying to stick up for Bob Lazar because
I don't know. I know.
I guess I'm trying to stick up for George Knapp because I think he's a darn good reporter.
I agree.
Yeah. So at any rate, I have to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Dennis Balthasar, UFO researcher. And before we get back to Dennis, I want to bring this up. I don't know if it's UFO-related or not. Frankly, I don't think so. But there is something strange going on in our world. Really, he says? and that is these strange sounds that are in the environment in different spots all over the world. Now, I don't know where you're listening right now to this show, but you may have even heard them. And I wondered, I've heard these sounds. It sounds like a freight train. Some of them sound like a freight train. Some of them sound like a jet engine, a wind tunnel. Old metal doors creaking, boat whistles, just weird sounds. And nice and loud, too. And they go on for hours. I have clips here, very short clips. I'm not going to play you hours of sounds. But just to give you an example of these sounds. And I thought, well, there could be sound effects, But I did a little investigation on it. And sure enough, local news coverage was done on these sounds all over the world. So I'm going to play just a few of them. This first one was from Lafayette, Illinois, and it was videotaped in February 16, 2012. From Tampa, Florida, on February 18, 2012. This one's from Oklahoma on January 25th, 2012. This one from Fort Worth, Texas. This was February 13th, 2012. This one from Colorado. And this one was from Amarillo, Texas. This is my favorite one. Doesn't sound anything like the former one. Now, can you imagine you're asleep in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden these noises start up, and you grab your video camera, and you're searching for the a source of it in the sky or wherever, all around the neighborhood, and all you record are these crazy sounds. And this is happening in different areas all over the world and has been, and they go on for hours. And nobody can find the source of these sounds. Dennis, what do you think of these sounds? Do you have any opinion?
First of all, my hearing's at 70. My hearing's not the best in the world.
Did you catch any of that?
The last one.
Yeah.
That almost sounds like something going past whatever is picking up, whatever microphone is picking it up. It sounds like the sound is dying off as it goes through there, whatever it is.
Yeah.
NASCAR cars do the same thing. If you're watching at a NASCAR race, it's real loud right in front of you, and then it dies off as they go around the track.
Right.
And on that one, I particularly noticed that the sound died off. On many of the others, it stayed constant.
Mm-hmm.
The Colorado one sounded like there was some clicking.
That one was the camera as he was zooming in and out. You hear a click in the camera. I meant to mention that, but that clicking was a camera.
Fort Worth, or Tampa, Florida, and the Oklahoma, to me, sounds like air going through a tube or a tunnel or whatever.
Yeah.
The Tampa, Florida had a slight variation in the tone. Oklahoma almost thought I heard talking in the background.
The one guy was saying, that is so loud. It hurts my ears.
Okay,
that's what he said.
I heard that.
Yeah, he said that into the camera. So,
well, the one you didn't have that I wondered about, you heard about the Taos hum?
No.
Okay, Taos, New Mexico is up in northern New Mexico, and for years, the people that lived there heard this hum, is my thinking, having done a lot of underground base research, we have tunnel boring equipment now that can bore through the earth without anyone knowing about it above ground, particularly the newer nuclear machines they have.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take anything in the ground or bring anything out, so you don't know they're there.
Right.
In one of my lectures, I have a map that shows underground tunnel systems that pretty well cover the whole United States. And I don't know, I haven't been able to verify that, but we do know that many bases now have underground facilities, military bases, as well as some of the government agencies, because nothing can be done above ground anymore because of satellites that are able to read a newspaper from 200 miles up.
Right.
And I don't know what the sounds were that you had. How did you obtain them?
Well, you can Google, you go to YouTube and click in the search strange sounds.
Okay.
And you'll get several of these. And you also get news reports from the local TV stations, radio stations, of these streams, where they occur. And they've interviewed some of these people who have recorded them or heard them, and they're awakened from a sound sleep. Some of them are during the day, but some of them at night, and they just go on for hours.
And they're almost too loud to be anything going on below ground.
Well, now, one of the theories that was thrown out there by people just, I don't know, maybe it's this or that, but was that it's coming from the Earth's core. Now, that doesn't sound like tectonic plates rubbing against each other, but what in the world? And it's different. If it was one kind of sound, I would, might go along with it, but they're different kind of sounds.
Yeah, that's what I was making notes as I was listening to them, and definitely there was a difference in them.
Yeah.
There was a lot of similarity between Illinois, Tampa, Florida,
yes,
Oklahoma, and Fort Worth.
Yeah.
But then Colorado had that clicking sound, which you said was a camera.
Yeah, it was a camera, yeah, because I could see, I've seen, I videotape a lot, too. And
the Amarillo one wasn't consistent. It died off.
Yeah, I know, and it died off, and it comes back and dies off again. And that was a long one. I just edited out some of the dead air that was in between, but then it would come back again.
Dave, did you tell me in an email that this sound also comes out of the pyramids?
No. I'm going to get to that shortly, but that was beams of light. No sound coming out of the pyramid.
Okay.
But it's just in the environment, in different neighborhoods, just all of a sudden, wow, these sounds start going. And it sounds like a jet. Some of them sound like a jet engine.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd swear you're standing right next to a jet engine, a jet revving up, or there's one right over your head. But the cameraman goes out and he's searching. And, what kind of jet is going to stay over your head, even if it was hiding around the corner, for goodness sake?
Now, I'm going to rule out UFOs because most people claim there's no sound for them.
Yeah, I know. I know. Like I said, I don't think it's UFO related.
Yeah. I'm going to, just having listened to that a little bit, I'm going to go with some form of air shaft.
Underground?
Air going through it. Tube or a tunnel because of the consistency of it.
What about that last one? Sound like boat whistles.
Yeah.
Boat whistles and interspersed with giant old metal doors being opened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And like I say, I would be inclined to believe that somebody turned on the video camera and had sound effects in the background, if it wasn't for the fact that it's made the local news.
Yeah.
And all over the world. And newspapers.
Well, I'm going to depend on you to drop me an email if you discover what they are.
Oh, my goodness.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I thought our listeners would would be interested in that.
Hopefully you'll get some response from the listeners.
Yeah, and I don't know where our listeners are right now listening to us, either you know, the day it's being aired, or on the archives. Uh-huh. But if you listeners have experienced this or do experience it and you're able to record it, please get in touch with me.
You bet.
Here at the station, or email dtwitchell@hotmail.com, or you can snail mail me at Post Office Box 511, Trenton, Michigan, 48183-0511. And if you missed that, just go on the archives again and check it out. Because try to get in touch. You can get in touch with me at the station, at WHFR station, because I would like to know if you have any theories or if you've experienced it, whatever. But it's going on periodically all over the world, and these sounds go on for hours. So
I don't know if there are such things, Dave, but a sound technician, some kind of an authority on sound,
mm-hmm.
if a person like that could listen to them, they might shed some light on it. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. They've tried. I mean, the experts have tried to identify these sounds. And yes, it sounds like this. Yes, it sounds like a jet engine. Yes, it sounds like a boat whistle.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the source? Where's the jet engine? Where's the boat? I mean, you're in the middle of a city, and
right.
a huge boat comes sailing by, you know, and just stays there for hours, and you can't see it. What is going on?
It goes that long.
Well, they go for hours sometime, hours on end.
And then it does stop.
Yeah, and then it stops. But then later it'll come back, it may come back, or come back in a different city.
Yeah, I think that rules out my air shaft.
It rules out the air shaft. Well, what do you think about the Earth's core concept there?
Well, you know so little about it, I think that would be a possibility we'd have to keep in mind, because we just don't know a whole lot about it. But
right.
the way earthquakes happen and things like that, we're getting more information as we have more.
Right.
But, you know, there's got to be some sound when the Earth starts moving and cracking and things like that. There has to be some sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't rule it out, no.
But the thing is, we've had earthquakes throughout history ad infinitum, and we've never heard these sounds before.
No.
Right?
Well, that's one of them you're going to have to keep the door open on them.
I guess so. So anyway.
Thanks for sharing them. Now you have me really confused.
Good. That's good. I like to befuddle my guests, you know. Generally, they befuddle me. I want to be, you know, getting you guys back.
You turn the tables on me.
I turn the table. Okay, I'm going to take one more break. And to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with a UFO researcher who is now befuddled as to the the sounds.
I think those sounds definitely go with the title of your show, We Are Not Alone.
we are not alone. And we're speaking with Dennis Balthasar. Dennis, you are an expert on
don't use that word.
Oh, okay, that's right. People have used that with me. He's an expert on this. I don't know nothing about this. But at any rate, you know somewhat about the pyramids of Egypt, pyramids around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another phenomenon that's going on that may or may not be extraterrestrial or other dimensional oriented, don't know. But they have gotten pictures of and have substantiated the fact that all of a sudden, out of these pyramids in different spots of the world, beams of light are coming from the apex, just shooting right up into the sky. What's your take on that?
Well, I belong to the Pyramid Association,
mm-hmm.
which is a group of Egyptologists and scientists, physicists all over the world,
mm-hmm.
and one of the researchers on the board of directors with me, has spent two nights on top of the Great Pyramid, which is flat. Mm. There's never had a capstone or finish the way it looks.
Mm.
And he spent two different nights up there with some equipment, and he was of the opinion that the Great Pyramid was an energy source of some kind, mm. and he believed related to the 11-year sunspot cycle.
Mm.
He's still working on that, but he's pretty well convinced that that's what it was built for, is for an energy machine of some kind. As far as any light coming out of it, I've not heard that from any of the researchers I've worked with.
Okay.
It's a possibility.
Jaime Musan got this photograph of this guy who was taking pictures of this pyramid in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And he snapped the pictures. As he did, this beam of light shot out. And it was, you know, it wasn't like a flashlight that stayed on. It just shot out. And this happened in a couple other places. And there's another thing to Google, is a beam of light from pyramid. And this is happening all over the world.
I wonder
well.
If that could have something to do with what we were talking about a while ago, about the core of the earth, or maybe an earthquake directly in that vicinity, and that would be a place for release of that energy.
Why would that light. Be? Why would a pyramid be?
Well, I think there's so little known about pyramids and the power that they possess. Mm. I know that over the years you've heard about putting razor blades in them to stay sharp.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the researchers on the board, a Russian, Vladimir Krasnolovich, and I love it when I can say his name, he has done some research in Russia with the Ukrainian Scientific Research Association and discovered that grain or seeds that are placed in a pyramid produce 30% more crop.
Right.
Weather phenomena stays pretty much away from the pyramids. Viruses don't spread inside the pyramid. I mean, he's got all kinds of scientific information about some of the things that take place inside the pyramid.
So they've done experiments inside the pyramid? Like with germinating plants and type of thing? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know I've seen liter bottle of soda being put underneath a pyramid shape and left there for I don't know how long, a week maybe, and all of the carbonation is taken out of the soda.
Well, he also said that water didn't freeze at 30 or 40 below zero.
Oh, my goodness.
Inside the pyramid. They built a pyramid in Russia, and this was research that he did inside that one. And, that one really surprised me, that water wouldn't freeze.
They just used the pyramid shape? Is that what you're saying?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, okay. Because I'd like to see somebody build a pyramid like...
like that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
I think... there was a PBS show years ago where Nova tried to duplicate that, and mm-hmm. they wound up using heavy equipment and still couldn't do it.
Right.
And that, of course, that's one of the things that I'm looking into, is we don't know who built them, when they were built, or for what purpose.
Right.
I mean, there's been all kinds of theories. I'm of the opinion they're much, much older than the Egyptian civilization, but because of tourism being the biggest business in Egypt, they're not going to relinquish their thoughts, the Egyptologists' thoughts about them building them.
Right.
But, you know, the Sphinx is the key to me. It has water deterioration on the back of the lion's body. That was caused by a great amount of rainfall, not by flooding or flowing water, but by rainfall.
Right.
And that was covered in sand until the 1800s. They didn't even know there was a body there. It's just the head was sticking out of the sand.
Hmm.
And many of the researchers I've worked with and some of the information I've gathered, we are of the opinion that the pyramids and the Sphinx much older than the Egyptian civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere from 10,000 to 40,000 years old. There's been some theories that the Israelis, when they were in captivity in Egypt, may have built them. That's not been proven. There's nothing in the Bible to mention the pyramids, although they would have existed during that time period.
Well, according to Cecil B. DeMille, the Egyptians used the Israelites to build the pyramids, as slaves to build the pyramids. But
that's one of the theories that I've heard, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Stephen Mueller is one of our researchers, and he is in communication with a gentleman in Egypt who has a history of both Egyptian civilization and prior to the Egyptians. And he claims there was a civilization in North Africa some 10,000 years ago known as Khemitians, K-H-E-M-I-T-I-A-N, who was a black, it was a black civilization predominantly controlled by females, women, that supposedly had contact with star people.
Mm.
That's how I got involved, because I'm not saying that E.T.'s built the pyramids by any means, but the technology to build them could have come from there.
Right.
And there was a time when the pyramid, the three pyramids of Giza were covered in polished limestone. Only one of them has any of that limestone left at the very top. In the 800s, the Arabs took most of that off. There was an earthquake in 1301 that damaged the pyramids, and the Arabs took most of that, the polished limestone, and made mosques and temples out of them.
Hmm. Was this during a war? Or?
No. But the earthquake created the problem where the stones came loose.
Okay.
And the workmanship on those things, it was something like a 50th of an inch between the stones. The workmanship was unbelievable.
Hmm.
And to stop and think that they had copper tools. Last year I wrote an editorial about how they would have got these 2 to 70 ton stones up 400 feet in the air. The most popular method, I guess, is the use of a ramp. But if you do the calculations on that, there'd be more material in the ramp than there was in the pyramid.
And, wow.
The math doesn't work out. In order to have 20, 30,000 people built a pyramid in 20 or 30 years would require setting a stone every 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the stones were not even quarried there. They were quarried miles away from the pyramids, had to be cut, quarried, loaded on barge, run up the Nile River, and then carried across to the site where the pyramids are. And they would have to set one every 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mathematically possible.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what gets me. Historians will say, well, the Egyptians built that for the king to put his body in, and they used slaves, and that's it. And everybody says, oh, okay, that's the way it is.
You know, I love that story, Dave, because the big pyramid was supposed to have built for Khufu, who was a pharaoh in the 4th dynasty, 2400 B.C.
Yeah.
There is nothing in the pyramid to show that anybody was ever built, buried there. The only thing the Arabs found when they went in 890 A.D. was an empty box in the king's chamber, a coffer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marble box, no hieroglyphics, nothing for the afterlife. Unless there's other chambers in that pyramid that we haven't found yet, the only thing they ever found on Khufu was a 3-inch statue miles away from the pyramids, which is in the Cairo Museum.
Mm.
You know, for a king or for a pharaoh to have his possessions for the afterlife, where are they?
Yeah, well,
if it was built for him, you know, why haven't we found any artifacts?
Yeah, they'll say grave robbers. They
don't buy grave robbers because the Arabs were the first to go in 890.
Mm-hmm.
So when they went in, they found nothing except that empty box, that empty coffer with no lid.
And they found no evidence of grave robbers?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, none.
Mm-hmm.
They broke into the pyramid the first time.
They broke in.
And you know, in the Valley of the Kings, where King Tut and all some of them were buried, when they went into some of them underground facilities, they found all kinds of things in there for the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which was common.
Yeah.
I don't believe they were ever built unless they may have been used years later by Pharaoh or pharaohs, but originally, there's no way I'm going to buy into the fact that they were built for that purpose.
No.
And the casing stones that I was talking about, those polished limestone casing stones, when the sun shone on them, they claimed that was visible from the moon.
Okay. When man was on the moon?
Had they had the casing stones on the pyramids then, they would have been able to see it from the moon, yeah.
How do they know that?
Because of the reflectivity of them, the polishedness of the ones that are still on the middle pyramid, that it would have had enough reflection to be able to... They can see the Great Wall of China, you can see from outer space.
Right.
And they claim that they would have been able to see the reflection of the sun off the pyramids.
Hmm. Getting back to the sun, then, and these beams of energy, beams of light that shoot out of the apex of the pyramids, do you think it's possible that this recent solar activity that's going on is causing these energy beams to...
With my engineering background, I can't hardly rule anything out of it. I have to have verification of it, but I can't rule it out as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I mean, let's assume that these pyramids were set up for some type of energy machine, okay?
Yeah.
And what is causing...
Go ahead. I think it's very possible.
Yeah, and then the solar activity just activates it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that's just a theory, but that's very possible. And well, maybe...
Like the things we talked about a while ago about, you know, what happens when you go inside the pyramid or something, you know, that's all still a mystery. We don't know what causes it to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Is it the shape of the pyramid?
Yeah, I believe it's the shape of the pyramid, and one side has to be facing magnetic north.
Okay.
You know, one side's facing magnetic north, and it's a right shape.
One interesting fact that I found about the pyramid, if you take all of the land mass of the Earth and combine it, get rid of the oceans and put all the land together, the north, south, and east, west jointure is exactly where the pyramids are.
Hmm.
That's taking all the land mass of the Earth, and then... In an article I wrote just recently about the pyramids, I used the formula for pi, 3.14.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the height of the pyramids from 481 feet times 2 times pi, you get the exact perimeter of the base of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And also... There's a direct relationship between the dimension of the pyramid and the dimensions of the Earth using a scale of 1 to 43,200.
Hmm.
So, you know, the alignment of the pyramids are almost perfectly aligned with the belt of Orion and the constellation Orion.
Right.
The Sphinx in the springtime faces exactly due east.
Hmm.
Whoever built the pyramids had tremendous knowledge of the heavens and astrology.
Right.
And there was a reason for them building those structures that way.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
Do you think, going back now to those weird sounds, do you think maybe solar activity could account for those as well? Now, this is just theorizing. You don't have to be right. Do you think that's a possibility?
Again, I can't rule it out, Dave.
I don't know, but between those strange sounds...
I'm not being a lot of help with you on this, but I'm, you know, there's so many possibilities and there's so much we don't know that these are all things that I think have to be looked at.
Yeah.
Does
yeah.
it have some effect from the core of the Earth that something is coming up through there and then comes out in a form of light?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it some form of energy that's built up underneath there that comes out? I don't know.
Just don't know. Yeah. Dennis Balthasar, where can we learn more about your work?
www.truthseekeratroswell. That's all one word. Truthseekeratroswell.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's got my email address there, and I get about 100, 150 emails a day.
Hmm.
But those that I don't delete, I do try to answer fairly quickly. So if any of your listeners have any questions about Roswell, Area 51, underground bases, or pyramids, I'd be happy to talk to them. And I have a editorial section on my website. At the top of the homepage, it says editorials. I've been writing editorials about every other month since 1999. I think there's 60 or 65 editorials about my research there that might be of interest to your listeners. Keep me informed on those sounds if you come up with anything.
I sure will. And thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Okay. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR, Dearborn.